This is Mae Brussel, the second half of World Watchers, program number 773. I'm talking about the violences in Paris and the national and international implications of those events and how they affect our electoral process at home and how we think about the world. The middleman for George Abdallah, because he may go to trial on those 1982 murders in Paris, is a member of the Greek Catholic Patriarch of Jerusalem, Monsignor Hilarum Kabuji, C-A-P-U-D-J-I, and this well-known Marxist, or avowed Marxist, George Abdallah, as I say, is closely affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church and is a Christian. He is not a Muslim, and he's the one that is cooking up all this trouble. And his attorney, as I say, is Jacques Verge, and the connection here to Klaus Barbie is very interesting because Klaus Barbie's team were so instrumental with violences that were the means by which Adolf Hitler came into power in the first place, and violences that cause us to elect and think a certain way until we shape up the way they did in 1933 when they voted for Adolf Hitler. Now, the book on Klaus Barbie called The Nazi Legacy and Klaus Barbie and the International Fascist Connection, it's written by a Magnus Linkletter and Isabel Hilton and Neil Asherson. They talk about Klaus Barbie. I have about six, seven books on Barbie now, but this one describes Klaus Barbie, who is the son of a French father, Vietnamese mother, not Klaus Barbie, Jacques Verge, his attorney, pardon me, the importance of Jacques Verge, a French father, a Vietnamese mother. He's 59 years old. He's very mysterious, and it tells about his work as a leftist, as a Maoist, working with Regis Debray, who now works with Mr. Mitterrand, and sending Debray to Bolivia to find Che Guevara and his guerrillas, and Debray, as I say, is advisor to the president, former president of France, Mitterrand. And Verge is described in this book as a reconstructed survivor of the spirit of 68, but we don't know what Verge was or what he means by that, what they mean by that. And then the book says in 1970, however, Jacques Verge vanished for no less than 8 years. He never offered an explanation, and rumors suggest he was involved in part of the time in training with Palestinian guerrillas in Lebanon. And his only remark about the return is, I have come back battle-hardened. Note that word. It's the right one. And so he is now representing these factions of the Christian, Catholic Christian terrorist, and Klaus Barbie, and other people tied to this world organization. Verge seems to be a very important attorney, and where he was, the 7 years are more important than all the BS that's written afterwards, because to be prepared to take on these cases, he has to get a lot of knowledge about how the system works from the inside, and I'm sure he did, so that he literally juggles history in his hands. This is why Barbie hasn't yet gone to trial, and he's been sitting there for 3 years. Now, I have a very interesting article called The Jeannot Trial and the Mysterious Four Septuagenarians, and this gets into the story of people related to the terrorists in Paris and who are pulling the strings financially. This particular article is about four men, Francois Jeannot, the one that I mentioned who hired Verge to be Barbie's lawyer. He's a Nazi Swiss financier. He's the literary executor of Adolf Hitler, of Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. It's Goebbels' secretary, Mr. von Oven, in Argentina, that every person who wants to see or wanted to see Klaus Barbie or Joseph Mengele had to go through Goebbels' secretary. And he recently sold for the Goebbels family that recent book several years ago on the Goebbels diary. I won't go into Hitler and Bormann now. I believe, I don't believe they're dead. Either one of them, never have, at least for quite a few years as I studied it. But he's the literary executor of these two particular people. While Barbie is waiting trial for the murders, and Verge was hired by Jeannot to take on the case, Barbie was a captain in the SS. And he has close affiliations, of course, with Licio Gelli, who also was a captain in the SS, who made the rat line so that Barbie and the likes of Barbie could leave Europe, thanks to American intelligence, and leave and be safe in South America till they could come back and create some of these scenes of violences around the world, particularly in Europe again. And Plus, Barbie is his affiliations and his network in South America are very important because Francois Jeannot is an avowed Nazi. He doesn't hide it, and he has connections to these various people and seems to be running the money bank out of Zurich, Switzerland, that makes a lot of their activities possible. The third person they talk about in this article is Alois Brunner. He was an aide to Adolf Eichmann. He lives in Damascus, Syria, and he's been involved in drug dealing and trafficking and connections with the Nazis around the world and in São Paulo, Brazil, where Joseph Mengele and Gustav Wagner and many of the top Nazis resided, and he had direct connections down there from Syria to São Paulo, Brazil, to those Nazis. And then a fourth person this article talks about is a Michael Raptus, alias Michel Pablo, an interesting person because he's a secret advisor to Prime Minister Andreas Papandreou and was in charge and controlled Papandreou from 1967 to 74 while he was in exile and the Greek military junta was in power. And he works closely with Ahmed Ben Bella, another well-known person from the Middle Eastern area that I'll detail more on in a few weeks, and Francois Jeannot. And this article suggests a very strong ties of a man closely linked with Nazis being the chief advisor to Andreas Papandreou in Greece. Now, banker Francois Jeannot was had a legal suit. In 1982, there was an article, four articles written against him by various writers in Europe, one by Jean-Claude Buer, B-U-H-R-E-R, in Le Monde, one by Jacques Desroches from L'Express, Jean Schmidt from Le Point, and La Tribune de Genève, written by Oliver Pauly. And these four articles went into the Nazi connections of Jeannot because of the links of terrorists that were being picked up in Paris from the Direct Action Group, who were directly related to Carlos the Jackal, who history has told us had close affiliations with the Central Intelligence Agency, with Frank Turpel, with Samuel Cummings, that's the brother-in-law of Senator John Tower, former Senator John Tower. And when these terrorists were arrested, and I'll do more on that story in a few minutes, these magazines, four of them, did articles on Jeannot, Francois Jeannot, being the money man behind the Nazi connections in Europe, the current banker for the Nazi connections, and he was with the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo, during the war, just as was Klaus Barbie. And he decided to sue them because they were accusing him of all these matters. The court case stayed in limbo from 1982 until last year when they settled out of court with a list of agreements. Jeannot agreed in the settlement that he didn't consider it defamatory to refer to his fascist or pro-Nazi obedience or convictions, that he has not changed or repudiated them, that his friendship with leading Swiss pro-Nazi George Altmaier is not defamatory, that it would not be an affront to his honor to be accused of being anti-Semitic or anti-Zionist. Now, this is the man, keep in mind, who's meeting with George Habash and Mr. Abdullah and the various people from the Direct Action Group and funding with his lawyer, the attorney for Klaus Barbie, and also representing the interests of Licio Gelli. He admitted as he settled the suit he filed the suit, and then he settled it out of court and didn't want to go to trial. He said he was recruited to the Abwehr, which is Hitler's intelligence, that he had contacts with the Black September terrorists, that he was in contact with their leader, Hassan Salameh, and that the four journalists had no idea how much he knew about Salameh. Now, Salameh is linked to the Munich massacre of the Jewish athletes and that terrorism that also had strong ties to the intelligence community. I don't have time to go into it now, but Jeannot is close to the late Salameh. He was killed not too long ago. And that he conceded meeting with George Habash, works with him. And he claimed also with pride his friendship with the late Nazi, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who also was part of the SS and very, very close to Adolf Hitler. And he was proud of these things. And all he wanted in the settlement of the suit, it didn't go to court, was that he did not actually fight the terrorism himself hand-to-hand on the street. As far as providing the money for the bombs, that was left wide open. But he took these journalists to task and decided that he would have a libel case because of the things that they said, and then decide they're not liable after all. They're all true, and I like what they say. So on November the 15th, 1985, the whole thing was thrown out of court. Now, maître, which is a French word for Mr., Marc Bonant, B-O-N-A-N-T, and that's a very important name. He's one of the most prominent attorneys in Switzerland. Marc Bonant, B-O-N-A-N-T, represents Mr. Jeannot. He represented him at the case against the journalist, and he's the one who decided it wouldn't be good to have all this out in the open. We'll settle it out of court. And the settlement agreed upon was a simple admission, as I say, that he never physically participated in violence, and that everything was okay, that he didn't, I think even part of the settlement was that he didn't mingle with Carlos the Jackal, but that didn't mean the other people that he worked with from Direct Action didn't meet with Carlos, or that Carlos wasn't with the CIA, which he was, and worked with United States intelligence. 3 days before the trial took place, as it didn't go to trial, the Swiss released a lot of the material that would have been in the trial case, and that was in the newspapers in Switzerland November the 13th, and they had the details of his Nazi connections. And as soon as they released that, then Andres Papandreou announced that he would ask Syria for extradition of Alois Bruner, which he hasn't done, and Bruner is accused of killing 46,000 Greek Jews of Salonika, but Papandreou hasn't even raised a finger except to mention that he would like Bruner. This isn't going to go to trial. And this article that I have says that the only problem here is that if Bruner went to Greece and Papandreou was just making a big gesture, he'd have to meet with Michel Rapti, the one I mentioned before, Mr. Raptis, who sent hundreds of people to Syria to train as terrorists by Mr. Bruner, and they were financed by François Jeannot. So what I'm saying here, I hope it isn't too complicated, is that Andres Papandreou has a right-hand man who has worked with this avowed Nazi and all the powers that be. That seems to be a control over Andres Papandreou, even when he was in exile and is running the Greek intelligence now, and that it would be hard for a Nazi to go back to Greece and be tried for killing lots of people there, lots of Jews, because he also simultaneously was training with the help of Jeannot people that went to Syria to learn to become terrorists for the activities that are happening now. Now, Jeannot liked, and of course is part and parcel of the Klaus Barbie milieu. He's worked with many Nazis, Nazi collaborators, and the reason for his closeness to Barbie and his putting Mr. Verge on the case to represent Barbie was that when Hitler moved against France, the Communist Party, the PCF, reversed the words, you know how it is in French and Spanish, the Parti Communist France, PCF, were instructed to cooperate with the occupation forces. The Soviet Union, the Communists said, cooperate with Hitler's team. They went in there in 1939 at the time of the Communist pact with Adolf Hitler. And so in 1939, Hitler and Stalin kept a legacy where the Nazis and Communists had a joint network in France and throughout the Mediterranean, which is hard for some people to understand. And when the war was over, this Michel Pablo was living in France, the one who's in charge of Mitterrand now, and he possessed the typographical plates that the Gestapo used to print counterfeit U.S. dollars for these people to use when the war was over, to have all these American dollars. Now, Barbie's legal expenses, since he's been brought back from Bolivia, are paid by Jeannot, this proud Nazi. And while he can't settle out of court for the things that he did, just as Jeannot did, he is vowing to bring down the collaborators with him when the trial starts. And Michael Rappas was the kingpin of a whole network of people, including, and this is very important, and I want to bring it up if I have time, another point about it, including members of the Israeli Mossad, who he says know a lot and conceal, and who could also come out, that present-day Israel and the Arab world collaborated with this team. Now, Otto von Bolschwing was one of the people from the SS that's helped set up Israel when it was Palestine to create Israel. Adolf Eichmann was friendly before he was captured and tried there with various people in the Israeli government. Menachem Begin was in Mussolini's brown shirts. And there was James Angleton of the Central Intelligence Agency, a Knight of Malta, was in charge of the Israeli desk for 20 years. And Rafi Eitan of the Mossad belonged to the group of Permandex, the same people that Jacques Soustelle are part of, that killed John Kennedy and tried to kill Charles de Gaulle. And I've mentioned it many times, that iffy part about the country of Israel and the threat now of Mr. Gounod and Mr. Varge, to go into these matters when the Barbie trial comes out, that it will be very embarrassing for people in the French government, but it will be also embarrassing for Israel. And again, it goes back to the question of the member of the direct action, the terrorist group that is linked to these people, who was in Israel. He was locked up for 15 years on bombing charges, on terrorism. And the day that Menachem Begin was elected, he released him. And then he releases him and he goes to Paris and is active again with Mr. Jeannot and the Nazi network. Why would the Mossad and Israel release a man who's going to work with the likes of Mr. Jeannot? There's a big mystery wrapped in a conundrum. There is no easy answer. And in simplistic terms, I have to just make an educated guess that I've always considered Israel a military base and not a country. And I've talked about that many times before. Now, to continue with this libel suit that was thrown out of court, Francois Jeannot and his lawyer, this Marc Bonnand, who's so prominent, also represents the elusive Licio Gelli, who's floating around the world, and presently has a passport written by Mr. Strassner from Paraguay, and he's been seen in Argentina, and he's been seen in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and he's floating around South America, and he works with Reverend Moon in the Causa group down in South America also. And when Reverend Moon's newspaper has a column, a full-page ad, which I'm sure nobody pays for, he donates it day after day, about terrorism, again, he's not going to these links. Now, Licio Gelli was from the Waffen-SS, like Klaus Barbie. As I said before, he helped build the route line that they came to South America. Gelli and Barbie and the whole team, including Otto Scarzini, are the father of this kind of terrorism to get people off their guard and to beg for a police state and to make deals with people that aren't kept so you have an excuse for more bombs. They did this kind of bombing with the Bologna bombing, with the Oktoberfest. They made Italy and Germany and Europe a mess, and France earlier, of bombings that went on continuously at random to scare people and, as they said, to get them off their guard. Now, Barbie's closest associates and pals in Bolivia attended the GOP convention in Dallas in 1984 and were with former National Security Director Richard Allen, and very much part of the American intelligence establishment. And Licio Gelli was in the United States, if not since then, at least in 1981, attending the inauguration of Ronald Reagan, and very close to Michael Ledeen and Francesco Pazienza. And of course, Ledeen and Henry Kissinger helped set up a secret, the Italian Red Brigades and the secret P2. There were two branches of the P2, and set up the terrorism in Italy and the lies about Ajan being a Bulgarian who tried to shoot the Pope, when the far right wing, the CIA, Frank Turpel, and their ilk were behind this. And again, having to make a scare against the Russians, just as the Wall Street Journal is doing just this past week with their editorial. Now, the Swiss government has protected Francois Jeannot since the 60s. I don't know where he was between 1945 and 1960, but he's been protected since the 1960s. And he's announced at various times that his role in the German Nazi Party started in 1934, and that he worked with the Swiss Nazi Party, the National Front, and he did spying for Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany during the war. And in March of 1982, Bruno Bruget and Magdalene Koff were arrested. Those were two terrorists who were arrested in France in 1982. It was on the basis of their arrests that the articles were written by Le Monde, L'Express, Le Point, and Le Tribune de Genève that caused Jeannot to have the lawsuit. And some four writers from these newspapers, French papers, raised questions about the Nazi circles of what was supposed to be Marxist terrorism in France. And as I say, the Red Brigade, the SLA, the Baader-Meinhof, the Carlos all turned out to actually have roots in the intelligence community, particularly of the United States, and of their own national intelligence, like Italian or French and so forth. Now, Francois Jeannot financed the lawyer to defend these people and Mr. Bruget and Magdalena Koff. And that's when the articles came out, because of Jeannot financing them. And people were asking, well, who is Jeannot? And Maurice Cruchon, C-R-U-C-H-O-N, was the lawyer Jeannot sent in those days to defend these two people who were charged with terrorism. And then the attorney married Junot's daughter, became his son-in-law, and Mr. Cruchon became a co-counsel in his office with Mark Bonant, who represents Licio Gelli. So as the story of the French terrorists evolved, and some good reporters were on the story, it linked Junot and then eventually Gelli, who had fled Europe in 1981. The story of the P2, the propaganda Dewey, that all of that broke in 1981, a week after the Pope was shot. And then, of course, after Roberta Calvi's death in London in June 82, Licio Gelli's name was in the news more. And Bonant is the attorney for Licio Gelli, and his cohort there is the writing executive or attorney for Hitler and Martin Bormann and the Goebbels family. That reminds me of the time when Joseph Mengele was supposed to be dead, and Fritz Steinecker had his picture in Newsweek, and he's the attorney that I said deposited Klaus Barbie's money for drugs in Mengele's account in Zurich, Switzerland, in the same city where all this activity is going on now. And Mr. Steinecker was interviewed in Newsweek. There's a picture of him. Yes, he is representing Joseph Mengele. Not the late Mengele. Mengele has sons and family, but for all intents and purposes, the attorneys don't speak about their clients in the past tense, just people who want to believe in the tooth fairy talk that way. Well, Le Monde had an article about Junot's Nazi past, his links with Hitler, his working in the Abwehr. And as the articles went on, his links to Adolf Hitler and Bormann and Goebbels became more a subject of the news in France and in Europe, Switzerland, and other countries. And the lawsuit stopped people from writing about him, Mr. Junot, and he's been very quiet. And after 4 years, when it settled down, then he settled it out of court. But there were lawsuits that nobody could ever use the name of Howard Hughes, and they had a Rosemont corporation or company, and nobody else could write, and they were sued if they put anything about use. Now, Junot was very closely associated with SS General Kurt Wolff, and he was also close to a man named Ranke, R-A-N-C-K-E, Heinrich Himmler's right-hand man. And Heinrich Himmler was making deals with Alan Dulles and Wild Bill Donovan of the OSS long before the war was over to restructure these Nazis and use them after the war. Licio Gelli, the client of Mr. Junot's attorney, was making the rat line, and Barbie was going to South America, and now all these various factions have one common lawyer and one financier, one living in Switzerland, and the lawyer Jacques Vergne representing all of them. And also, Junot is very close to Hallmar Schacht, who was the late Hallmar Schacht, who was Hitler's Nazi economics minister. Schacht's son-in-law, Otto Skorzeny, was the one who set up these terrorist activities and networks that could be functioning for strategy of tension. And it was John J. McCloy of the Warren Commission who earlier had released these top Nazis, such as Hallmar Schacht, so they could go out and do their business. And as I say, Junot agreed to all the things that they said about him in the articles, and so that they weren't allowed to, the defendants weren't allowed to present their evidence in full, that the if full trial. But among the witnesses who did appear, who were the defendants that Junot was going to accost because they said these nasty things about him, that he changed his mind, they weren't so bad after all, there was a Marie Madeleine Forsade, president of the Expert Committee on the Resurgence of Nazism. And this is very important because these people had these committees in 1982, and that's what we're getting now again with this confrontation in the Middle East, in the synagogue in Turkey, in the Pakistan airport, in the attempted, and I don't believe they meant to kill, Pinochet in Chile so that he could have more control. I forgot to put the shooting of Pinochet in among these agents provocateurs violences that are an excuse for more control. Marie Madeleine Forsade was going to give evidence against Junot from the Committee on Resurgence of Nazism. Jacques de La Rue, a member of the Expert Committee on the Resurgence of Nazism, was to present the links of this gentleman again to George Habash and to the Palestinian fronts and to the bombings going on in Europe in the early 1980s. Daniel Meyer, former president of the League des Droits de l'Homme, it's called the League for the Rights of Man, and he's founder of the International Action Committee to Resistance. Isabelle Vignac, a journalist and resistance veteran. Now, this is a very interesting name of people who had written articles about Junot and the terrorism at the time. There's one name that fits here that is very, very interesting, And that is Claire Sterling, the author of The Terror Network. Now, Sterling later, if she was working to find and saw Nazi connections and wrote about Junot then and was going to be a witness on Nazi resurgence, she made a 180-degree turnabout so she could have been a plant in this group, because then she worked with Michael Ledeen and Francesco Panzianz and Paul Henze in talking about the terrorism from the left, which she knew in 1982 had its Nazi origins, and she was one of the bigwigs in making the lie about Aja working for the KGB and the Bulgarians. And it's very interesting that her name shows up here. The other one is Isabel Vishniak, a journalist and resistance veteran. And the final person who was going to testify is a lady whose book has just come out, translated in French. She wrote a book called The Barbie Affair that was released in French. It's in English now, and I understand it's a very, very good book on all of these Nazi connections. And as soon as you get that, and I just heard about her book just recently, and as soon as I get that, we'll get more of how the far right-wing fascists use the Red Brigades of the Direct Action in France, or the PLO or the Palestinian Fronts, for the resurgence of what the Grand Mufti of the SS wanted. And it also ties together with Otto Skorzeny training the armies in Egypt and training Libya, Muammar Gaddafi when he was just a young man, and training the Arab countries with a strong Nazi Gestapo Wehrmacht background for the kinds of confrontations you're going to see soon. And on that basis, they're lucky so far that only the one synagogue has been shot with 22 mourners killed in Turkey. It's going to get much worse. Now, there was a press conference of Irma Paris where she revealed at the time the trial was put off in 1985 that Junot is so closely linked to Klaus Barbie. And as I say, she has a book on that now. And Jacques de la Rue outlined how his committee was tracking Junot's Nazi connections after they discovered his participation in a 1944 meeting of Nazi financiers in Strasbourg. Now, remember, I've said that from 1943 on, the Nazis go underground. The plans for everything you're seeing in 1985 was decided as back as early as 1944. The war wasn't over until 1945. And this material that I have just verifies over and over again what I'm seeing all the time, that the financiers met in Strasbourg, this time at a particular meeting, and that the plans for Junot and funding the likes of these people, as well as the Americans and the worldwide sympathy of the power structure towards the Nazis, was being decided in 1944. And then the journalist author of the book, The Spy Who Came from the Extreme Right, and I don't have that book, reported that pro-Nazi historians and Junot intimate David Irving admitted to Junot's involvement in arms trafficking. Now, David Irving is very active with Liberty Lobby and with the stories that there was no Holocaust. He was out there recently, I believe, at California for their annual meeting, that there was no Holocaust. And he's tied up to the Liberty Lobby and Willie Cardo and the American Nazi fascist group that keeps saying that the camps were people killed by the Russians, that the Nazis didn't have anything to do with this. Another witness at this trial was going to be J. Tarnero, former president of the Paris Center of Research on Anti-Semitism, who exposed the parallel of anti-Zionism professed by the pro-Nazi circles and the similar denial of the direct action terrorist that of the existence of Nazi concentration camps. That there are a lot of parallels here, and the reason there are is that the people living and funding these things were part of the original plans of genocide and the control of the world. Now, there's an article in People's World, August 15th, "Where is Licio Gelli?" The question is asked. Italian rightists win government appointments. And it said that members of the P2 are getting new appointments. Carlos Suarez Mason, former Argentine military boss, charged with crimes against humanity, has been traveling around South America with passports given by Paraguayan dictator Alfredo Stroessner for Licio Gelli and Mr. Mason. And Bettino Craxi, the Prime Minister of Italy, was a member of the P2. And there are other people in Rome getting promotions from the P2. People are trying to pretend that the organization to overthrow the country didn't exist. And this is about Mr. Stroessner providing assistance to Licio Gelli for whatever he's doing down there. My time is up now. Next week I'll go a little bit into the maid of Ronald and Nancy Reagan, who travels to Europe and Japan and London, who was caught with 50,000 rounds of .22 ammunition for Paraguay for the military dictatorship of the down in Paraguay of Mr. Stroessner. But we won't have time in this 1 minute now. I will conclude by just saying the Claus Barbie trial should begin in 1987 with Jacques Vergès as the attorney, and Vergès represents all these other various factions that are closely linked to Licio Gelli and Direct Action and George Habash and our intelligence community and Carlos, all of them tied together in ways that I hope in 1 hour I can make a little sense out of this, and next week I'll go over it one more time, maybe simplify some of it and get the names straight so you can see who are the players in this dirty game. In the meanwhile, this is Mae Bressel, and I'll be back with you next week and continue some more on the Paris violences.